Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Welcome to This Song Is Yours, the music podcast that delves into the art and craft of songwriting with some of the industry's most exciting talents. I'm your host, Simon Fink, and today we're thrilled to have you join us for episode 306. In this episode, we have the distinct pleasure of welcoming Flight, the remarkable UK folk duo, to this very podcast. Flight recently graced the music world with their third record, a self-titled masterpiece that has been creating buzz and receiving multiple five-star reviews around the world. This record is a testament to their songwriting prowess, and it features collaborative magic with the likes of songwriters like Billy Martin and Laura Marling. Joining us today is band member Will Taylor, here to unravel the magic of folk music, discuss the intention and meaning woven into their songwriting, and of course, provide insights into their future touring plans. We'll be diving deep into the heart of Flight's creativity and their captivating journey. As you soak in the wisdom and artistry of Will Taylor and Nick Hill, who make up Flight, we encourage you to explore their self-titled record to fully appreciate their work. And if you're in Australia, like myself, you might want to pay extra attention for hints about any future visits to us. Now, before we jump into this fascinating conversation, please make sure to subscribe to This Song Is Yours on your favorite podcast platform. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media for all the latest updates. Links to all our social channels can be found in the show notes for today's episode. So let's go ahead and immerse ourselves in the timeless melodies and storytelling of Flight with our wonderful guest today, Will Taylor.
How do we start healing if we can't keep out the dark? Are you for real tough love?
Please welcome to This Song Is Yours, Will Taylor from Flight. Good evening, sir. How are you going?
Oh, I'm going very well, thank you. It's about 20 to 6 here in Nashville right now. So that's evening. That's evening time. Halloween kind of season. So it's cold and people are, you know, they seem to be dressed up here in the States. Just kind of, we've been here for 3 weeks and there's just sort of, they've been a sort of in a kind of permanent state of Halloween. It's amazing.
Have you guys been able to get into the Halloween spirit at all? Has there been any dressing up, any costumes?
No, and I feel like such a square. Like, we were rehearsing in a rehearsal studio here in Nashville yesterday, yesterday was actual Halloween. And we just sort of finished quite late at about 8 in the evening. And then we kind of went to a bar to eat some food and have some beers and then got invited to a house party. And we turned up at the house party and we were just sort of just looking like very normal people in the context of this incredibly Halloween-y situation. And we just kind of felt, oh, sad. The answer to your question is no, we haven't got into the Halloween spirit.
No, look, that's very, very fair. It's we were just discussing before we were recording that we are based in Australia, and it's a bit of a funny thing here because it seems to have taken off in the last 5 or 10 years, but nowhere near as much as America does, I believe. And so it's very hit and miss here as well in terms of, like, you kind of go to things and it's not a Halloween event, or you show up in not regular clothes and it is. So I very much feel that kind of pain, if you will.
Yeah, it's just, it's got to be 100%, hasn't it, from everyone or not at all. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the cynical sort of Londoner in me yesterday was just like, oh, everyone dressing up so silly. You know, I need to get over myself and start, you know, dressing up as, I saw a lot of people over the last few weeks dressing up as a chef from The Bear, you know, that series set in Chicago. Like, just they're just wearing white t-shirt, a blue apron. So easy.
Oh, my thought was, if I was invited to a Halloween event this year, that would probably be my go-to. Is it nice and simple? You can tell what it is.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. But we are not here to talk about Halloween costumes, although I'm sure we could go on for a little bit longer. We're here to talk about the brand new record from Flight, which is out now. It is a stunning record. So firstly, sir, congratulations on this, because it's a beautiful, beautiful record.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we're so pleased for it to be out in the world finally.
Of course. How are you guys feeling now that these songs are out? I think that it's been 3 or 4 years since the last one, and I think that some of these songs have kind of been floating around for even longer than that.
Yeah, I think so. The last record was at the end of 2021. And it was a breakup record called This Is Really Gonna Hurt. And it was very clearly and very concisely a breakup record. It was like a concept album almost, where we did the order of events post breakup on the track listing. So like the first track of the record is like written, you know, minutes after the actual breakup occurs. And then the second one is sort of 2 weeks later, and all the different sort of feelings and, you know, the anger or the sadness or the, eventually the acceptance, all of those things happen chronologically throughout the record on our second record. And so, you know, we're back, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later with, you know, a kind of a response to that record, which is, you know, a record about love, and, you know, it's really just written within the context of my relationship with my partner, who's a singer too, Billy Martin, she's called. And she, you know, she put out a record kind of written, kind of corresponding to our one this year as well. So there's like a kind of an autobiographical through line going on. It's kind of a little bit, it's sort of artistically heightened, obviously, but, you know, we tried again to do it with this record, where we would sort of have the pre-speech bubble as the first track, and it's sort of asking someone to start a relationship, saying, let me be this and let me be that. And then throughout the record, it kind of settles in more and more into a relationship, until you're kind of on songs like Even on Bad Days, which is, it's sort of like you're inside this relationship. Now you're past that moment of initial excitement, and you're settled in, you're moved in together. There's, it's exploring things in that sense. And so, yeah, it's funny though, because we do have to kind of make them years before, if you know what I mean. So when the kind of the happiness of the, someone's moving some stuff around us, but, oh, there we go. The perils of being in a rehearsal studio. when we put out the breakup record, I was actually already way past that. And, you know, and in that happy relationship that this record is now about. And so, you know, and then we made the record that's just come out now about a year and a half ago. So it's funny just how long sometimes things take to actually see the light of day. But, you know, there's a song called Chelsea Smiles on the record, which we had sort of teased, you know, like a year ago or a year and a half ago, just on social media. And it feels like that one, like people already know that song. I've seen people cover that song. You know, and but now it's actually out, like since Friday it's been out for the first time, and it's funny, it just feels like an old song.
What I had heard. I think where did I read it? I read it somewhere. I think Chelsea Smiles almost kind of started in its first iteration maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, and then has changed, evolved, grown, and then, as you've said, it's kind of built up this almost weird cult thing that is unusual for a song that's only been released last week.
Yeah, it is an odd one. I mean, and that's really just to do with our writing process, because we had that chord progression. We had that about 6-7 years ago, just as a chord progression. And we'd sort of, you know, be stoned and like tinker around on the acoustic guitar and just be like, play that chord progression again. And then we'd play it and be like, that's cool, that's still cool. And we just never quite located the companion chord progression to go with it, because it was a sort of kind of a three chunk chord progression that then needed an extra section. And we ended up we ended up finding another section for that, like melodically and chordally, about sort of 4 years later. And we then had the complete melody, but then it took us another year or so to actually write the words to it, because for us, having melody before words is really, really difficult. We just find it such an almost impossible task sometimes to just actually fit the lyric to the melody once the melody is clearly established. I guess because a melody sort of implies the limitations of what you can write about to a certain extent. There's a finite amount of kind of lyrical equations that will perfectly slot with that melody. And Nick and I we're very persistent in terms of, like, have we got the absolute best version of what this can be? Anyway, it was so funny. And we ended up writing sort of three different versions lyrically. One was a sort of football violence song. One was a sort of an ode to London. Another was a sort of a love song about a girl, Chelsea. Because once we had that title, Chelsea Smiles, we kind of realized it was a kind of three-edged meaning. and so we kind of wrote three different versions of that lyric and then wrote them all down physically on paper and then cut them all up, each line, with scissors, and then just randomly ordered, like, collaged the lyrics. It was just, it was like, we really don't write. That sounds so arduous. It was, actually. But, like, we really normally, especially with this record, have written pretty quickly and with a certain level of ease. But that particular one, it's funny, it just was one of those, just, I think for every sort of three songs that you can write fairly quickly and in a kind of fairly instinctive way without having to overthink or be too academic about it, there's always one that you do just have, you're just always working on, you're always tinkering on, you're always stuck on it. Go, should we look at that one again? It's like, oh, God. But it's so funny because over the years we've learned that those ones, if you persist, it really can be the, you know, people's favorite sometimes. So, you know, it's worth always persisting.
100%. I love the kind of, I think you even mentioned it then in terms of the way that yourself and Nick write with the music. Listening to the record, as I said, it is a stunning record. Anyone who's listening to this podcast, there are links in the show notes to listen to the record. But I think that traditional kind of folk music, or like very good kind of folk music, has this kind of timeless quality to it. And I feel that these songs, although like folk music does tend to be evergreen, how much intention is put into these songs kind of being able to be not just of the moment, if that makes sense, you know?
Well, it's such a good question you're asking there, because that is the fundamental question that Nick and I always ask ourselves. That's the kind of our primary objective, is to make sure that the song will not only be deeply unfashionable in its own time, but will continue to be, you know, forever and ever. We just want a song to be, I guess the easy word to use is timeless. It's kind of an easy word to bandy about and people like to say it a lot, but I think ultimately the quickest and easiest way we've found in order, like, to kind of achieve that particular feeling, it really comes down to settling into your fight. I'm trying to think in advance as a way to say this without sounding very cheesy and pretentious, but it's finding, no, you know, it's finding your truth. And what I mean by that is knowing that what it is that you're writing about, what's coming out of you in the end. And I think largely, I mean, like, in terms of lyrical content, those words need to be so, so true to you. You know, you have to know that you'll be able to go night after night, you know, on stage and sing that song and still feel it and still know it and still understand it in terms of what it means to you. And I think, I think avoiding kind of anything that will pin you into your own era. I guess, I mean, like, sort of mentioning things like iPhones or, you know, like texting or I don't know, you know, just like staying as emotionally true to yourself as possible. It oddly kind of means that you then sort of start stepping more into the...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Into the realm of the infinite. Because when you really lock into a proper truthful feeling that you truly can kind of understand, what you've done there is you've accessed something that's ancient, because there's no such thing as a brand new, never before felt feeling or dilemma or, you know, consideration as to, you know, we deal ultimately, and especially in these last two records, with relationships, with love and relationships and friendships, and those things are timeless. So if you have managed to not be contrived, and I mean emotionally contrived in any way, then you'll absolutely be fine. And I think that we do also try and mirror that in the melodies that we write too. You know, we try to avoid chord progressions that feel too traditional or sort of nostalgic, you know. And even though, you know, obviously our influences are probably older music, we also just try and make sure that the feeling that you're listening to, like, kind of old-fashioned type chords or old-fashioned type melodies is avoided, and also avoiding, you know, modern sounding melodies too. You know, it's just about finding, again, the most truthful melody, the chord progression that feels like it serves the melody and the sentiment of the song as much as possible. That's the only thing you concern yourself with. So you never think about style. You never think about the context in which you're putting the music out. You never reference other people's music. You just never think about anything except the actual emotional thrust of why this song is going to exist. And once you do that, I think that's your best shot at achieving something timeless.
100%. I'd be so curious to know, Will, I guess, your own introduction to songwriting. Is that kind of where, I guess, you got your initial knowledge of what we've just discussed in terms of keeping things, not of that moment, as you said, timeless, keeping things that are, yeah, not as mentioning iPhones or pages, Blackberries, just using tech as an example, horrible example, I apologize. But yeah, exactly. I'd love to know where you kind of got your introduction to songwriting, and then I guess the parameters of how you wanted to be as a songwriter.
Yeah, I think I couldn't give you a really clean answer to that, because I actually haven't really stopped to think about it, really, because we have been going as songwriters and as people in bands or as, you know, artists or whatever you want to call it, since we were children, you know, since we were 9, 10 years old. I mean, the first song I wrote, I think I was about 9. And at that point, you're not quite aware really of what it, you know, you're just at that age, you're just drawn to something and you're doing it. And, you know, I didn't even stop to think what I was doing, really. I suppose I could try and sort of remove myself from that for a second. I mean, my family were English teachers and sort of actors, and they loved Shakespeare, and there was performers and like people who were interested in words in my family, and that I think is probably a factor. For sure. But for me, music was my opportunity to do something that was nothing to do with either of my parents or my brothers. and I could just carve out my own. I'm a middle child. I have kind of divorced parents, and everyone's kind of quite big personalities. So it was my way of finding my own thing. Mm-hmm. And I think through that, there was always a desire, even really early on as a teenager, to not be a part of my own time. I think I didn't get introduced to any music. I think inadvertently I did a little bit get introduced to music, some music from my parents, but they weren't a musical family really. So a lot of the music I was discovering early on, it was sort of by accident or by, you know, busking, you know, on my high street in the city I grew up in, and then going to the CD shop and buying a few CDs that maybe got recommended, or I just liked to look at the cover. I remember I used to go to school with my CD Walkman and sort of hide my headphones up my blazer sleeve and just sit and just throughout every single day and just listen to CDs I'd bought. And you know, Joni Mitchell Blue, when I was sort of 13, 14, was like a huge, huge awakening. Bob Dylan. I think Beatles have been sort of omnipresent in my life, just as an English person, actually just as a human being.
Yeah.
Since I was sort of like 3 years old. So that to me, that those four musicians are sort of like my religion in a weird way, where I think I know every single thing about that band ever. And I could, you know, I could probably sit down on an acoustic guitar and sing you every song they ever wrote. You know, that's very much in the fabric of it all. So some really boringly obvious, like, early influences. But I guess it's through companionship and through, you know, thinking of it as a craft and having, the pressure pretty early on in our 20s, once we got really properly going, to really try and excel, you know. And we were always told by any wise person in the industry that we came across that it was all about the songwriting. You know, it could be about other things too, but as long as you could write good songs, then you would always have a career. And so there was always a, you know, I'm sure that most people are told that, but maybe not enough, because sometimes it does feel like, especially now, people are, you know, maybe the current, like, teenage generation will be encouraged to be more social media focused, maybe spread a little more thinly and not consider. You just have to put so much time in to songwriting. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things you just have to do. You don't have to put 10,000 hours in. You have to put, you know, 100,000 hours in. It's just one of those things where the more you do it, the better you'll get. And it's not something you can ever kind of rest on your laurels with. So, you know, I wonder, because for instance, when people are sort of signed to record companies now, I mean, we write songs for people too, that, you know, outside of Flight, and a lot of the time we'll have, you know, young people sort of sent to us for us to kind of write songs for them. And it's just, and it's sort of a bit like, why are you doing that? You know, I mean, well, we can do that, sure, but like, teach them how to be encouraged that, you know, that's their job. This is exactly what they should be doing. Is writing that, you know, this is the beginning of, you know, a very tall mountain they should be beginning to climb up, you know. Mm. And so it's sort of, I do worry sometimes there's a sense that music industry kind of commodifies young people based on their sort of social media following and go, yeah, well, we just need to get them a few songs and, you know, and we could shift a few units and get our data and our stats higher and stuff. And, you know, really it's a long, long journey, songwriting. It's a big slog. You have to write maybe 100 really bad songs before you can write a good one. And you know, yeah, you just got to encourage people to look at it in terms of just a really, really long term thing. But maybe I'm projecting, because I mean that's just what happened with us. But sorry, very long answer to your question.
No. I appreciate it. I prefer the long answer, but I think there's some definite truth to what you're saying as well. I know that. And I don't want to name and shame any young artists that do have a predominantly large social media following, but you kind of tend to see that they'll release those one or two songs, but then the music career will just kind of drop off. There's no longevity with it. It seems that it's, I feel like almost, as you said, labels kind of capitalizing on it, but also that it seems like that when there is that challenge of the mountain, using your analogy, that they kind of begin to climb it and then don't have any interest in it.
Yeah, well, and perhaps that is just that's just a certain type of person who was never going to climb up that mountain in the first place, you know. Exactly. And that's fine, you know. And I do know some really fantastic songwriters who are, you know, in their late teens or early 20s, who have had a little moment, as they say, on TikTok, for instance. Mm-hmm. And they then continue to write and get better and better. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with the medium of TikTok necessarily. I think it's more to do with just, I think, over prioritizing what that is. You know, it's just a platform to promote something that's actually bigger than the platform itself. And I think sometimes people get a bit confused and think that the TikTok success is greater than the actual creative merit of being a good songwriter. And, you know, and I can understand why that is, because one's instantly gratifying and the other is it's a really difficult long-term slog.
Yes, it is sometimes obvious, but sometimes it's kind of missed, as you mentioned. I'd love to know, I know you earlier you mentioned Billy Martin, who's your partner. She does make an appearance on this self-titled third record, as does the lovely Laura Marling. How did these kind of collaborations come about? It's kind of obvious that why Billy might have gotten involved, but I guess at what point did you think, hey, maybe we'll get her on one of these tracks?
I think with the Billy song that she sings on was written for her very quickly. Actually, Nick and I had the little tagline in the chorus and the melody of the song, but I hadn't filled in the lyrics yet in the verses. And she was having some blues. We were just kind of set up in bed one night and I was playing the guitar. And she was in a kind of bit of a blue funk. And I just remember being like, oh, fuck, I'll just write these lyrics really, really quickly to cheer her up, you know. And that was quite early on in our relationship. And that was a nice feeling. I was like, oh, God, there was just an actual, like, active purpose to mm-hmm. writing those words. It was just mm-hmm. to cheer her up. I wasn't taking the song too seriously. So anyway, it ended up being like, you know, a year later, maybe, when we were actually recording the song. And I was like, actually, that's actually so ideal that there's a song that really, really properly is sort of just in the fabric of that particular relationship that is being written about. And it felt really appropriate to have her sing on it to kind of highlight that. But Laura Marling is a sort of a friend who lives around the corner. We don't know each other extraordinarily well. We've only known each other, you know, really properly in the last sort of 2-3 years. And she'd shared a song of us. I think it was Losing You, when the second record was coming out on, Instagram or something like that. And we're like, oh my God, Laura Marling's listening to our stuff. You know, that was really cool for us. And so, in the end, I think one of the practical aspects of why she ended up, you know, agreeing to come and sing on it, cause she's not someone who says yes to anything. She's a very kind of, she's very, very, I think one of the reasons she's got such a great reputation and has sort of almost got a mythical quality to her is that she's very good at saying no, you know, to things. But, you know, we were working with Don Monks. He was engineering the record at the time. And he, along with Ethan Johns, had made her recent records. And, we just said, maybe Laura could sing on this. I think it would be perfect for her, like in the second verse. It would be great to have her, because this sort of song is basically a bit of a dialogue between two people in a relationship. So it felt like it would be fantastic to have someone feature. And Dom just texted her sort of not very hopefully. And then she instantly was like, yeah, brilliant. I'll just pop up. And she was just down the road and she just came straight in, and it took about 2 hours and then she did it. And we all smiled at each other and then she left. It was as simple as that, really. And you know, what was also very funny is that Will Reese from a band called the Mystery Jets, was also in the studio. He was overdubbing some ideas on that track already, so he was already in the studio. And the last time she'd done a duet like that was with that band Mystery Jets, sort of maybe 10 years prior, in that same studio. It's a song called
Young Love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'd recorded it at Conk Studios, which is where we were recording in North London. So I thought that, and we all sort of shared a little moment there about that. It was quite interesting.
I absolutely love that. Very serendipitous almost.
Totally. Yeah, crazy.
Well, I know that, as you said, you've been on tour the last few weeks in America, at least. I know you've been touring this year. It might seem like a little bit of an obvious question, but obviously because we are down here in Australia, I do have to ask, can we expect to maybe next year see you here in support of the record.
Yeah, I mean, that is, I can't promise anything, but I mean, that's something that we're, the thing is, if we were to come over, we'd probably only come over just Nick and I, because it's so expensive to get everyone. The issue we have is that we sort of have this wonderful band in the UK that can really reproduce the entire record, sort of six piece altogether, including Nick and I. And when we go out to America, we're just sort of started being a four piece. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's, whenever there's a sort of a new frontier, we've never gone over. And it's such a funny risk when you're crossing the entire, literally the going to the opposite end of the earth, because mm-hmm. you go, you know, if there's going to be like 1,000 people there who will buy a ticket and come see us, then it's totally worth it. But maybe we will go all the way to the other end of the earth and about 20 people will be there. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, and you never know until you try it, try it once. So I think it's just about, you know, rolling that dice, which I think we will do next year. Absolutely.
Regardless of what iteration of the lineup that we do receive, I'll, 2-3 members, whatever we get, we'll gladly take. So I very much appreciate you for allowing me to ask that. Will, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. I do appreciate it. And congratulations on the new flight record. It is out now. We'll have links within the episode show notes for people to purchase the record. But thank you again for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Simon. It's been a lovely chat.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.